Jason Choi, give me a name.
Lao Tzu.
Welcome to Give Me a Name, where a guest presents me, Ben Kirschenbaum, with a dead historical figure they find interesting, and we discuss. In the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu says, "Those who know do not speak. Those who speak do not know." Now, please listen to Jason and I chat for the next 41 minutes.
All right, I'm here with Jason Choi to talk about one of the all-time Chinese philosophers, Lao Tzu.
I don't think everything's kind of acceptable.
And it's spelled a bunch of different ways, T-Z-U, yeah. Or Lao Tzu, I see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just that Chinese is just very hard to Romanize.
Yeah. I'm not even quite sure myself.
Were you born in America?
Yeah. I'm first gen. My mom's Chinese. My dad's Korean. So I have no affiliation, really. You know?
Affiliation with China?
No, I have no, like, they're like half my home. You know, I'm mixed.
Right.
So it's like, I dabble a little of this, a little of that, you know? It's all good.
All right, well, we got a very political, very neutral stance here.
Yes, I'm going for neutrality.
I think you've accomplished it, which is kind of a little in line with Taoism, which is what Lao Tzu is famous as, the founder of Taoism. Whether he existed or not is a question.
Right.
Taoism also could be spelled with a T, with a D, same idea there with the...
Right. And then even like that whole thing too, like I'll watch some of these YouTube videos and then some people will be talking, like giving this long sort of video essay that they formulated and they'll call it like Taoism or something. And you'll see in the YouTube comments, it's not pronounced Taoism.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not even the whole point of everything that he's trying to talk
about. It also works the other way, because I was watching a few of those YouTube ones too that are like getting into these deep discussions and really good analysis, and the only comments underneath are like, this guy's pronunciation is right on point. Yeah.
And, the first chapter is even about how like the words don't matter.
Yeah, so Taoism, so Lao Tzu is credited with writing the Tao Te Ching, which is the fundamental... What's it?
Pronounced it wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
Did I pronounce it? Fucking idiot.
I don't know.
Which is the foundational text of what we now call Taoism.
Yeah.
And we could get a little bit into the sort of history of who this guy might have been. The legendary story is that he was around 500 BC and a contemporary of Confucius,
mm-hmm.
who's like the biggest philosopher, I guess. Yeah. I don't know if you need to rank them, but like...
Yeah, there's a very Socrates-Plato kind of dynamic there.
The big two.
Yeah.
Just going at it. And...
Mm-hmm. One taught the other type of thing, you know.
And it seems like, according to legend, Lao Tzu was kind of the older guy, and Confucius really looked up to him.
Yeah.
And called him a dragon, which is like, you know, or compared him to a dragon, which is like a huge compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And the story goes that Lao Tzu was a archivist for the government, I think it's pronounced Zhou Dynasty, Z-H-O-U, and the government's kind of fallen apart, a slow decline. He gets fed up, he leaves, and right as he's crossing the border, a guard is like, hey, I know who you are. You know, you're this like super wise man,
mm-hmm.
and Lao Tzu literally means old master, right?
Yep.
It's so Lao Tzu is not his name; it's just like a title, like Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, like, "Hey, can you write down all of your lessons, all of your wisdom?" And he just whips out; he just writes, I guess, on the spot, the most famous text, you know, that there is.
An unbelievable work of genius,
and it's not long.
No.
It's like 80, it's kind of split into verses, I guess you would call it, like little chapters.
And most of it is redundant because the teaching that he's trying to give is actually like incredibly simple. But then each of the verses tries to present the same simplicity through like a kind of different lens. So then as you're reading it, you're going like, it could be almost nothing because like it's not dense. And he even talks about it. He's like, in some of the chapters, even describes how it's like, the thing I'm trying to tell you is the most simple of things,
which makes it even harder to, like, it's weird because it's like so simple that it's dense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's why, like, I think it's a real true text. It's trying to describe something that's formless by using form.
And that's what he says right at the beginning.
100%. Like, and that's why I think it's so profound, is because, like, you can even look at the first line he says, the Tao that can't be described is not the real Tao. And then he proceeds to try to describe the Tao through the entire thing.
So it's this weird that basically it's at the outset being like, the thing, this book that I'm about to write is pointless.
Yes.
Because
100%.
It's not, because it's, I'm about to try to describe something that's indescribable.
That's right. And you, it almost requires that. And we, and you know, this is part of a bigger sort of like theological discussion, but like most of the religions, people get so caught up in the rules and adhering to these like rules, but all religions are trying to point to the this sort of abstract spiritual underpinning of existence type thing. And I see in the Tao Te Ching that he tries very explicitly to address that fact, that like the forms of language, the structure of language, is pointing at something that is languageless and is formless.
Yeah, the second you put a word on something, you've already lost its real essence.
Exactly. You know, and then the way he describes even that process in chapter 2 is so brilliant. He lets us know that something like, for example, something like hot and cold, as human beings, we're required to understand hot and cold. But like when you're looking at the underlying philosophy, it's really just like the acceleration of the particles. It's not a thing, really.
Yeah, it's just
there's no hot and cold, really.
Yeah.
Like the truth of it is that it's like how excited the particles are and how like, you know, sort of non-excited they are that creates this hot and cold.
But when we say hot and cold, we're not thinking about that nitty-gritty science of it.
That's right.
It's just this feeling that we get.
Right. And it's specific to our relation to reality. It doesn't exist. But we have to understand hot and cold because our particular bodies do different things in those states. Right? But like the actual existence of the thing is only, it's created because of consciousness. Like hot and cold is created because we're here.
Right.
If you took all of us out, who the fuck is saying hot and cold?
You know? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
It like exists purely in the dimension of the mind.
It's all through us. Yeah.
And so then this is what he's pointing to, is that like we create language, we create structures to orient us in the world. But the deeper truth is that none of it exists
without
the
mind. We've created this thing.
Yes.
He has some quote in there where it's like the one, which I think refers to the Tao. Mm-hmm. So we should probably say that the Tao literally translates to like a path or a road.
The way. Yeah.
And there are a lot of interpretations of it, but it seems like for Lao Tzu, it's sort of everything. It's the natural way of the universe, of like how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And Taoism is the finding the practice of kind of going with that universe, not going against it, but like kind of letting it, being one with it.
Yes. And it's so fast. The Tao, the mental exercise, I almost like, I think everybody can understand it. I think you can understand, like, if you've ever been just, like, at peace.
Yeah.
And you're, like, out in nature or something. This is why, like, all this stuff usually isn't, like, you know, some guy's meditating under a tree type of thing.
Yeah.
This is where it's, like, understood. The Tao is, like, the underlying emptiness. Like, and then even in this description, you know, the more and more you try to relate to it, the further and further away you actually get away. It's not something that, like, you can say out loud. Yeah. Through words to arrive at another person being able to feel it. I think it's one of those things that, like, you kind of just know. Like, if you just sit there and, like, close your eyes and sit in silence and you just, like, allow a certain amount of emptiness. Like, there's thoughts. right? That like, well, everybody knows this during meditating. There's like thoughts that just like buzz.
Oh yeah, I can't meditate. Anytime I've tried to meditate, it makes me, it's just all these crazy thoughts. It's the opposite of what it's supposed to be.
Right.
I can't empty my mind. I just sort of have like, you know, a million different worries or things I got to do and stuff.
Sure, sure. But then what about the space in between the thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't given it. I get the idea that you have to work on it. Like, you know, like probably the more you do it, the better you become at it.
Yeah, maybe. But then there's one of these great quotes where he's like, the man seeking wisdom learns something every day.
Right.
And then kind of the man who follows the Tao unlearns something every day. So I think like to approach something like meditation as like a skill where you're acquiring a thing.
I've already ruined the thing.
Yeah, you're kind of already like in the, it's more about just like stripping it all away.
Yeah.
It's actually like it's not an active pursuit. It like, and this is what he's kind of trying to describe. It's more of like a surrendering pursuit.
You kept saying emptiness. One thing that I thought was cool when I was listening to a podcast is one interpretation of a road or a path is exactly what it sounds like, right? Like a way of getting somewhere or whatever. But then another interpretation is a road is in between buildings and trees and all this stuff. In a way, a road is nothing. It's like right. The emptiness between all this stuff.
Yes. Oh my God. He has a brilliant quote in there where he's like, he says something along the lines of like, the house is made of walls, but like, it's the emptiness that we use. Right?
Yeah.
Like the walls of the house make the house, but what is the house is the space within.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know? He's got a good point.
He's got a pretty, like, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So then it like kind of refers to us where it's like, and this like refers to the Tao almost as like the personalities that we have, the sort of thoughts that can, or things that construct us, right? It's all there to encapsulate the emptiness. And, you know, obviously we're talking about something extremely abstract, but like you can almost intuit how that's like true about us too.
Yeah. It's just about filling in the gap. I mean, a lot of the times Taoism, the imagery of running water or like a river is often used.
Mm-hmm.
You were mentioning before like religions that put in rules and stuff. One of the main philosophies that Taoism is contrasted against is Confucianism, which is kind of largely about like setting up rules to be a, you know, good person, mm-hmm. a virtuous person in all of your relationships, right? Like being good to your parents and different relationships within politics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it seems like with Taoism, it's much more of the example that's used is if there's a rock in your way, say like flowing down the water,
mm-hmm.
and like a Confucianist would say like, find some way to break the rock to let the water go through. While a Taoist would say like, give it time, eventually the rock will erode and it'll be a pebble.
Yes.
And I don't know. I feel like it takes a great deal of patience, which I think is one of the main virtues of Taoism.
Yes. You know, and implicit within that is the idea that like we're all fundamentally good.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that's like a philosophical debate that like people have been waging, will debate to the end of time. But I err on the side that it has to be the case that we're all inherently good because babies are good.
Again, you're getting with the political. You know? Just so you know, if you're just listening, Jason like pointed at the camera when he said babies are good in a very sort of politician way.
Babies are good.
You're running on the campaign.
This is me advocating for that people come from goodness.
It's true. Yeah.
Because all babies are good.
Yeah.
Right? So then it's a process of life that makes people become evil. There's no baby that is like immediately like, fuck you, dumb black people or whatever, you know? Every baby is like loving.
Yeah.
And is like giving love to the people who created them, right? All babies like need something, you know, are vulnerable. They cry every time they need something. They don't like withhold their emotions and shun it out until they become like a toxic person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think like this is what it's kind of referring to is like if you strip out all the garbage and the trauma of like being alive, that initial point of the birth of your consciousness was always in love. You know, we're all like love-based beings from the beginning.
The same podcast I was listening to called, I think it was called Philosophize This. I'm going to stop referring to it because then otherwise people will just listen to that podcast.
Which yeah, is yeah, like,
yeah. You know what I mean? But
it's probably much better than this one.
No, it's garbage other than these two parts that I'm mentioning. But they gave, they were talking about the difference between like, if let's say, you know, in the case of Lao Tzu, if he was really alive during the time they say, it was while this government was collapsing. And a lot of the times when things are going poorly then and now, you have like sort of the progressive point of view that's saying, let's create something new. This isn't working. Let's create something new.
Mm.
And then you have what's usually labeled the more conservative point of view, which is this isn't working because we've strayed from something, from the pure stuff before.
Right.
And he was saying that Lao Tzu is not that he's like a conservative, but he is one of these people that's like any problem that we have now is because we've forgotten the simplicity that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like go back. I feel like a lot of the time it like could be referenced with like technology and stuff. Like I think he would very much be someone who's like warning about, you know, the development of technology and like the totally. Ways it could be abused.
And like, you know, the progressive conservative dichotomy like isn't necessarily like form fitting, like as I hear it, because sometimes progressivism is actually returning to the simple truth.
Yeah.
And the conservative of the time, it's always within context.
Right. Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The conserv maybe actually betraying like the truth of like, you know, the just like these kinds of sort of simple original things of like loving people, being compassionate, you know.
Yeah, I think it means conservative and now it's got like so much baggage, Republican and Democrat or whatever.
Right.
But I think it goes to the more the idea of like conservative, just the word conserve, I feel like.
Yes, it goes to the point of like languages, like people, this is something I've realized over like too, is that like language is really tricky, yeah. Right? People get caught up in language and thinking that language is the thing that it's pointing to.
Yeah.
But it's not. The thing that it's pointing to lives a vastly more complex existence. And your language is a way to point at it so that we can have a dialogue and like be able to interact with it intellectually, but it's still a small model compared to the actual thing that it's referring to.
Yeah, it's imperfect.
Right. So then like, you know, we talk about progressivism, conservatism.
It's got a lot of baggage and it doesn't even refer to anything. Yeah.
Right. Like in this case, you know, how you're using conservatism is like in the context of Lao Tzu, which is like returning to the way, but just the same, like I think progressives have, on the whole in America, like, have been advocating for that, you know?
Yeah, I think going back is like, is sort of a universal type thing.
Right.
And I just wanted to go back to, because you were given the example of hot and cold, and one of the main concepts that's associated with Taoism, Lao Tzu didn't, like, invent this concept or whatever, but is yin-yang.
Mm-hmm.
And might be the most, like, kind of famous in the West type
sure.
thing. So yin yang, everyone knows the symbol, right? With the like black and white cookie, but like a little swirled or whatever. Mm-hmm. And with the dot of black in the white and the dot of white in the black.
That's right, yeah.
And that goes to, you're talking about how hot and cold don't exist without us, but it's also like hot doesn't exist without cold.
That's right.
And cold doesn't exist without hot.
Yeah. And then he also says that like beauty creates ugliness. Everything that like is a thing also creates the opposite of it. Like that's just like it's trippy. It's really trippy, but it's like you can't have one without the other. Because everything exists in a dual state.
Yeah.
Of like if there is a thing, the opposite of a thing must also exist.
And when he talks about politics a little bit, and by politics I mean just like what a good leader is.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of like, I read later that, like, anarchists and also libertarians kind of try to reference him.
Sure.
Because it's he's kind of, he's a bit of a, he kind of, he says that a ruler, the best ruler is the one who isn't really noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. And also, I think, gets back to the discussion we were having before, because it's like, if there are no rules, then there are no rule breakers type thing.
Yeah. It gets very tricky.
Yeah.
You know, because like people find, like I said, you know, all babies are born good. But then obviously we know that it turns out very different as we progress through time.
What I will say, though, is that babies are selfish.
They are selfish, but like, it's not, it doesn't come from like, let's say, ego.
No, just survival.
Yeah, I mean, it's selfish on the basis of like, there's a purity to the selfishness that's not like, I need this to fulfill something that was broken in my childhood, so therefore give me, you know, your
wallet.
Yeah, you know, or like whatever.
Yeah. No, that is an important distinction, I feel like. Yeah.
Because they genuinely have need. Like, people who are selfish in an adult context, like, who knows what that's about.
Yeah, there's probably some baggage or whatever.
It can be, any number of things.
So, one of the main concepts in Taoism is the idea of Wu Wei, which I've heard mainly defined as something like action without action.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a major message of it. It seems like kind of a let it be, go with the flow type thing. Where it's not laziness, it's not like do nothing, but it's definitely saying, you know, be one with the way the universe is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let that lead the way, and don't, kind of going back to that boulder thing, like, don't destroy the boulder, just sort of like, you know, let the water find the little crevices and reach through it. Or air wind, I think, is often used as a symbol for it.
Right.
Is there a reason why, like, this general philosophy resonates with you in particular? Because obviously it does, since you chose him.
Well, I think, like, you can logically arrive at the same conclusion the following way. Like, okay, you're sitting there in a point in time, and you're dealing with an outcome that you don't know what's going to happen, right? And so that's making you anxious, and you want to do something to alleviate your anxiety.
Yeah.
Right? This is like basically this is the exact like embodied situation that is like this philosophy is trying to speak about.
Yeah, right? you just took a test and you're not going to get it back probably for a week or something like that.
You know,
what you did is out of your hands.
Exactly. Or you're into a job interview.
Yeah.
And you're like wondering what it is that you should be doing, okay? We all have this life experience. How many times in those life experiences do we, after the outcome is over, do we realize, like, all the stress that we felt wasn't necessary with the final outcome? Didn't even impact it in any way?
Yeah.
Right?
If anything hurt. Yeah.
If anything actually hurt, because maybe you were, like, so stressed you, like, yelled at your girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Or, like, you told a guy on the street to fuck off.
Yeah.
And then it ended up not even mattering at the end. So then, like, In a practical speaking way, the chances that like you in this point in time can figure your way into manipulating the future to like influence a future point in time, it is real. Obviously, we do that all the time. We make plans, we structure things. But I think the point of it is saying that like there are moments of alignment where like the thing that you need to do becomes clear, and then you just do it.
Do you feel like there's a parallel with stand-up? So I definitely feel like there's a parallel with like comedy and show business in general, because so much is out of your control.
Sure.
Like what's in your control is you sit down to write, you try to get on stage as much as you can. And there's a parallel, I guess, with that in any job, right? You can control the things you can control. And then the waiting aspect and wanting other people to approve of you is out of your control. I mean, like then it's done.
Right.
But what about with like coming up with ideas, anything creative?
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother bag of...
Yeah. But I mean it in the same of like a sense of like letting things come to you as opposed to forcing something.
I think 100... I mean, and you can read... I think almost every every artist like who gained prominence and was able to talk about their things says a similar thing, that it's like the amount that it's in your control is like kind of not.
Yeah.
You know, we create all these like false models in our heads. Like a lot of times in comedy, you hear people using like athletic or like sports based metaphors.
Sure.
But that's like an entirely different, I mean, they do relate in terms of like being disciplined and like conscientious. But when you play sports, if you lift weights, you're going to get stronger. You know, guaranteed. You lift enough weights, you're going to get stronger. If you write for 10 hours a day, there's no guarantee that you're going to become a better writer. In fact, you'll probably become worse.
Wait, why do you say worse? I'm doing this all wrong.
Well, because then, like, sometimes when that happens, and this is something I've experienced, you start writing not from the place of like creativity. You start writing from the place of like, I need to be productive.
Sure.
And like, what is art? You know, you're trying to distill a piece of emotion, something really like we're talking about, abstract and ephemeral. You need to be open enough to be able to like channel that rather than like just talking about some sort of ego kind of thing that is compelling you to do something that may be like off course and disingenuous to like some to the more like higher sophisticated thing you could be doing if you had just let go.
I guess the aspect of it that's with this stuff that's not laziness, at least in this example, is that you do sit down to write.
Of course.
But you just don't have that extra conflict with the things you can't control, namely, yes. You know, having some sort of muse and inspiration.
Absolutely.
Which is really hard. Which is like really harder, more tougher said than done.
Whenever people hear that thing, like don't resist, go with the flow, people automatically assume it's laziness.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is. It's just waiting for alignment. How many times do we, like if you look at a situation, like the scenario we were just talking about, you're trying to be proactive and then you do, and you go off and do something that doesn't even help. Is like based off something maybe a guy told you, is not related to how you feel, and then doesn't even improve the situation at the end of the day. So like you could call that hard work, but it didn't move the boulder in any kind of significant way. So then I think going with the flow is like waiting towards the universe to configure itself in such a way where you're like, okay, if I do this, the boulder moves.
And what's interesting about Taoism, so it's compared a lot to Buddhism, which there's also the like maybe the idea that Lao Tzu went west and maybe he did like create Buddhism, yeah. or whatever.
Some people think he is the Buddha.
Something, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think one of the main differences between them is that, you know, Buddhism is about this idea of achieving nirvana, right? About like almost leaving this world on some level.
Mm.
While Taoism is more of a, I don't want to say self-help, but it is like, it is about this world.
Yeah, that's interesting.
In the sense that it's like, he has some quotes in there where it's, don't try and you'll succeed type thing, you know, or I shouldn't say try, but like, don't push it and you'll succeed.
Yes.
So it is about achieving certain things within this world.
Mm-hmm.
Which also gets to the idea of like, is it a philosophy? Is it a religion? Which is a whole can of worms because it's kind of became a religion later on. And now there's like tons of, you know, rites and temples, and Lao Tzu has become kind of a deity to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But that's all after the fact.
Right.
Like,
same with the Buddha too.
Yeah. But the Tao Te Ching itself is sort of, what would you say? Like, I don't mean to make it sound like a dating profile, but like spiritual, not religious. Would that be kind of the idea?
Well, again, like the words are what get people caught up. It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just that like over time, people, like in the same way that we get addicted to words, people get addicted to forms that are supposed to point to the formless. All religion is supposed to point at something greater. It's none of the rituals, none of the words, none of the text is meant to be the end point. The end point is the deeper thing that they're trying to tell us about. So it's all spiritual. What becomes, then it becomes religious dogma because of that thing that we were talking about where people get addicted to the meaning of conservative, the meaning of progressivism, the meaning of Christ, you know, people get addicted to the form.
Yeah.
You know, and then it becomes religion dogma, and then there's distinction.
Yeah, I mean, I should also say that, like, so with Taoism itself, the main guy is Lao Tzu, or at least credited as the main guy, or by main, I mean first, is Lao Tzu. And then there's a second major figure, Chuang Tzu, I think is his name. And he also has, he wrote a book, which I think is just called Chuang Tzu. Like, I think the book and his name is the same thing. But he kind of advances these ideas. That idea of, like, the anarchism type thing, I think is, like, very much his, he really propels that. He comes, like, a century or two later than Lao Tzu was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
He also has different parables and examples that he uses. He has the famous one where it's like, I dreamt that I was a butterfly, but then I had the thought that how do I know that I'm not actually just a butterfly who was dreaming about being me?
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Didn't a European also come up with that too? I'm not sure.
Or it might have been both. Yeah, I don't know. But it just is interesting to me how these like thoughts like develop over time. But when you're talking about the Tao Te Ching, it is just like this very, anyone can read it. But I think that there's like a million different ways to go with it.
100%. And then the thing always become like, my friend Matt Hardy,
yeah,
who you know is like, he's an unbelievably intelligent person when it comes to like this kind of spiritual philosophy type stuff. He gave me a quote that I thought was like very relevant, which is, I forgot who it was, but basically somebody said that the Buddhist monk who's adhering to his principles and the Wall Street business broker are essentially the same in the sense that like both have committed to form.
Can you explain that a little further? Form meaning that they
have like rules. This is, if I do this, then I'm right.
Right. Just the goals, the details may be different.
Exactly. Right. Like they're all sort of addicted and committed to a set of, you know, rules.
Yeah.
That's why like a conversation like this is tricky because we're trying to define something. But the whole point of spirituality is like as soon as you define it, you're in the opposite underworld of it. You know, in a kind of weird way.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you try to be like this is what it is, this is what it isn't.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Well, geez, I'm sorry that I decided to do this podcast. No, but I do understand what you're saying.
Right.
And it's weird because then you do associate religion as like the ultimate or confusion, like the ultimate giving me rules type thing.
Totally. And that's why, like, if you even want to get into like deeper about it, that's why, like, you know, Nietzsche had talked about the death of God and like why Christianity ultimately collapsed in on itself. Because as soon as religions get dogmatic, it's betraying its essential purpose, fundamentally. As soon as, like, it's not giving people that, like, communion with the deeper underlying structures of reality.
Yeah.
And instead getting them addicted to form and then, like, having that form be an excuse for not actually being virtuous. What's the point of a religion? It's not doing what it's it's not, it's like a company that's not, it's like a fucking Hasbro selling actual guns.
Yeah, it's just the opposite of what it intended to be.
Yeah.
Well, what about like the quick fixes, meaning the, you know, heaven? Like that's great. Here's an answer to a question that can never be answered. Like,
sure.
So where does like, I don't know, I feel like that's a big part of religion that is, you know, it's one of the reasons that we go to it, right? Is because it's answering the unanswerable questions.
Sure.
But I guess you're saying that the second that you start having different rules and regulations and rights in terms of like getting there, that it's not actually getting at anything deeply philosophical or
right. Important. Because
yeah.
What happens after you die should be a fucking staggering question.
Yeah.
It should be unbelievable. It should like confront you with, and also like, it's a huge question. And it also is the case that like every molecule in your body was there at the start of the universe. So we're all as old as the universe. How do you even, it gets so nutty. But then that's why the Tao Te Ching is like so profound because that kind of like,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, it takes a certain amount of like, I don't know, authenticity to just be like, listen, I don't.
Yeah, know? Exactly. And you're like, but that's actually, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why, like, this, how Tao Te Ching presents itself as a paradox. That's the paradox. This kind of, oh, okay. Holy shit. But continuing forth and knowing that that's like an, that it is, it is.
Yeah. You know? It reminds me almost in a weird way of that, the Louis bit that I think he got kind of famous for, the airplane bit, where he's like, everyone on the airplane should just be like, ah, I'm flying. This is crazy.
Right.
Where there's a little bit of that where it's like, this is insane.
It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And then, and this is, that's a great point that you brought up, because look at what having form and being addicted to form does to us. It makes us more ever increasingly greedier and more desensitized and less able to commune with beauty.
Right.
That's the whole underlying meaning of that bit, is that like, is being like overprivileged and,
yeah. Right. If you're not focused on the beauty and the awesomeness of flying in the air, or in the case of Taoism, of just the universe itself,
right,
then in the Louis bit, it's like you're complaining about that your seat doesn't go far back enough, or that I think the beginning of the bit is that like the YouTube doesn't work because the internet went out or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I think like there's a practical problem that emerges, which is that if you're just like consumed with the profundity all day, it's hard to fucking,
well, live. You can't live.
Yeah, no, it's like hard to live that life.
Yeah.
So obviously, like we all necessarily have to dip into form and structure and language to like move and navigate the world.
One thing that I thought was kind of interesting, and it might be not just Lao Tzu, but also Chuang Tzu and like later people, but they seem to be not anti-education, but anti-learning stuff. Like, I think Chuang Tzu has the thing where he's like, my life is finite, but the amount of stuff I can learn is infinite. Mm-hmm. So why even bother like learning?
I don't know much about him.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, but I think Lao Tzu has a similar thing where it's like learning little. It's related to the form thing, where it's like learning little things that are more tangible.
Yeah,
is not that important.
Well, I mean, you even think about it practically. Like we're all living in this society, TikTok and all this crap, and it's making us all depressed.
Yeah.
We all know it. It's all like savaging our souls.
I don't know about you. TikTok's actually been giving me a lot.
You know,
my videos that get tens of views have given me a great deal of satisfaction.
Everybody's fucking cheating.
Yeah.
You know,
buying followers. Yeah.
Right. Buying followers. Yeah. It's all this crazy crap.
Yeah.
The suicide, people want to kill themselves, you know, like all this crazy shit that's going on. And then you hear these reports of these like Bush people who are living longer than us, have way healthier hearts than we do, and they've literally not progressed even into the Stone Age.
Listen, man, if you want to get out of here and just go.
No, I love all the modern comforts. Yeah.
But no, I mean, I know what you mean. But then, like, you also think of what you were saying before, like a Buddhist monk who also lives a life of simplicity, mm-hmm. but they're also going through rules.
Yes.
So simplicity is not just the only thing here.
No.
Or at least not in that sense,
Well, like, ignoring, like, being like, oh, I can't talk to you, son. I'm trying to be... live simplicity. Like, that's also like sounds kind of wrong, right?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's more to do with the communion with spirit and not betraying your heart in the end of the day. That's what it is to me.
And what got you into this stuff? Did you read it as a kid or?
No, just recently.
Yeah.
You know, like just going through some like personal things, like trying to just like hear quotes and, you know, like go back to wisdom and stuff. And you know, I've always been fascinated by the Tao Te Ching, especially like if you ever gotten into like Eckhart Tolle, who's like a fantastic, he wrote The Power of Now, Oprah Winfrey's Seal of Approval.
get out.
Yeah. But he's written, he's like a modern day spiritual master.
I see. Yeah.
And like he refers to this kind of stuff all the time. He refers to the Tao Te Ching all the time.
I'll check it out.
It's brilliant. I mean, it's brilliant. And what you find is that, like, even if you go to like Hermeticism, you know, which was like written by a Greek, he's saying the exact same stuff as this guy, who was alive 200 years before him, thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
And then they all still arrive at these like principles of like.
Dude, that is what always is insane to me. So just for, yeah, a little bit of that. So Confucius and Lao Tzu are apparently around 500 BC. That's not long before. It's like pretty close to Socrates.
Right.
And you've got also the Greek philosopher Heraclitus has a lot of stuff also about like kind of yin yang type philosophy and like duality.
Totally.
So it is wild. And Buddha is not that
the
far
Buddha,
away.
Yeah. Christ,
yeah.
Muhammad. I mean, these guys were thousands of miles apart.
Yeah.
But then they all arrive at similar, you know, with very, you know, little differences in form.
Sure.
But if they're all pointing to the same thing because the underlying thing is fucking real.
Yeah.
You can't. What are you going to do about it? It's there.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for talking to me about some.
I don't know anything. I don't goddamn know anything. I truly don't. I want to make it explicitly clear that everything I said was out of my asshole.
I thought you were going to say a lie.
No.
Was it everything I said was a very intentional lie.
So what you got basically from me was a whole bunch of farting for my own indulgence. And
I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Ben. All right. I love this stuff.